Media. First case today is a 96-1607, Thomas Barlin versus Eau Claire County. Eau Claire County is represented by Keith R. Zims or Zims. Okay. You have 15 minutes. There will be a 10-minute argument by Bruce L.P. representing Hampson. Correct? And then a 5-minute rebuttal by you, Mr. L.P. Okay. You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Keith Sames. I'm Corporation Counsel for Eau Claire County, and I represent Eau Claire County defendant co-appellant in this case. I think first we have to talk about what this case is about and then what this case is not about. What this case is about is a very fact-specific situation. This case is about a fully qualified professional legal secretary with over 4 years of legal secretary experience being denied contractual bumping rights by the circuit judges of Eau Claire County exercising their arbitrary personal preference. This is about the statutory authority of the county to provide fully qualified staff to the courts without violating the collective bargaining agreement and the coverage of the Municipal Employment Relations Act. This case is about an arbitrary and non-reviewable use of inherent authority. In this case, it's a sort of a preemptive strike due to the personal preference by the judges. And according to the judge's brief, I believe, in this case, they would find that this inherent authority is virtually unlimited. This is also about the fact that we've had a collective bargaining agreement in Eau Claire County with the clerical union since 1972. Since 1972, all vacancies that have occurred in the legal secretary positions have been filled through the collective bargaining agreement, or if qualified people were not available, have been filled through the personnel policies of Eau Claire County, which are codified. During this whole period of time, the smooth functioning of the courts has been assured, and the efficiency of the courts has never been impaired. This also, I believe, is about tilting the balance of powers between the branches of government in this case and concentrating too much power in the circuit court judges of Eau Claire County and thus the judiciary. What this case is not about. This case is not about the integrity of the courts. And the facts presented, I don't believe that even comes into being. There's no unreasonable burden or substantial interference. There's no material impairment of the functioning. It's not an emergency situation which would call into use the inherent authority. And there's not a demonstrated threat to the ability of the courts to continue to function by allowing this bumping to take place. And it's certainly not about any dissatisfaction or deficiency in performance of Penny Walski, the individual whose position was eliminated in another department and who attempted to bump. There's nothing in the record that would indicate that she cannot maintain trust and confidences. In fact, the record is exactly the opposite. She's demonstrated an inability to maintain confidentiality. And there's nothing in the record to indicate that in any way she is engaged in any misconduct or for any other reason would not be a suitable legal secretary for the courts.
Mr. Zames, let me ask you, if I might, a couple of questions. How long have the judges in Eau Claire County had judicial assistants or secretarial staff?
They have had judicial. I have been in the county a little over 14 years, and I can say for that entire time they have had judicial secretaries. I believe that has existed probably to the early 70s, but I cannot tell you that as a matter of fact.
So this isn't something that came about with the block grants that went from the state to counties within the last 3 or 4 years. This is something that's gone on a long period of time.
Correct.
Have there been similar collective bargaining agreements during those years?
Yes, Your Honor. Since 1972, obviously the collective bargaining agreement changes from time to time, but essentially the scope of the collective bargaining agreement has changed. Also, the qualifications for the position have been relatively constant over that period of time.
The bumping provision has been in?
And the bumping provision has been in, yes.
For 14 years, or roughly, whatever.
Who has fixed salaries?
The county. These are either county employees or paid for the county treasurer.
So the judges have had no say until this point in the selection of their either secretary or judicial assistant in Eau Claire County?
No, I don't believe that's true. What has happened is where the job posting procedure has worked and has been a qualified individual, that person has filled the position. If there is not a qualified individual, then we go to the standard county recruitment policies. And under those policies, basically it's up to the appointing, whoever makes the ultimate appointment, whether they want 3 or 5 or 7 people to interview. And the personnel department does the recruitment process, and then the pre-qualified applicants are given to the appointing authority for interview, and then the appointing authority makes the determination.
The appointing authority
is the judges.
So if there was nobody internally that wanted the position and that was qualified, then the judges were making the appointments by virtue of a group that were given to them by the county.
And I know there's been one case where there was a question regarding qualifications, where the judges indicated they did not feel an individual had the necessary qualifications and that person did not fill the position.
Has this ever occurred before in Eau Claire County where there's been a bumping situation and the judge has rejected the person that was bumped in, if you will?
No.
But the bumping has occurred.
This is the first layoff situation in the time that I've been in Eau Claire County.
So bumping has not occurred before the judge.
Specifically as it relates to somebody bumping into a legal secretary position, no.
So
there may have been other bumping that occurred in the county at some distance of time.
So historically, you know, I guess all these questions have to do with the prior practice. Historically, in Eau Claire County, as far as that final decision, whether this person should be there or not, that has, if I understand the answer to these questions, the judges have made that decision. Is that correct? The judges have ultimately made that decision?
Whether it's through the collective bargaining process, whether there's a qualified candidate,
Who has ultimately made the decision? Has it been a judge or the judges of Eau Claire County? That's what I'm...
If it's... I guess there's two answers to that question, Your Honor. If it's a situation where it's an outside recruitment, then it's a judge or a group of judges who actually make the appointment. If there's a qualified person through the collective bargaining agreement, and there's no question about the qualifications, the person basically fills through the posting process the collective bargaining agreement.
Okay, now on the bumping, there was a quote qualified, Sharon Mellon was the person that was bumped by the other person that you mentioned. So there was a person there. This is the first time that has happened where there was someone replaced, and obviously over the objection of the judge or the judges. That's the first time this has happened.
This is the first time this happened since I've been at Eau Claire County. It's the first time it's happened involving a judicial secretary.
Okay, so historically, the judges have been involved in the process, and historically, this is the first time that this bumping has occurred. That's the facts for you. Okay, thank you.
Now, are the judges complaining that the assistants are under the collective bargaining agreement at all in terms of hiring, or is it only the bumping provisions?
To this point, we have never had an objection to the fact that these people are covered by collective bargaining, that they are municipal employees, as that term is defined under the Municipal Employment Relations Act. And in this case, there was absolutely no question whether the person whose position was eliminated and was attempting to bump was qualified. There never was any discussion along that lines. The judge's position was, we have the inherent authority, and that's it. We have the inherent authority to appoint our assistants, so we're not...
The whole thing. They want totally out of the collective bargaining agreement.
Yes.
I have two questions. The first being just a one more historical question. Have there been times when there's a vacancy as a judicial assistant and there have been a qualified person in the system that have filled the position where the judge has not selected that person that you know
yes.
of?
Yes.
That has
yes.
happened.
And the facts, I believe, state the last time that happened was in 1981 where somebody.
What is to stop the county board from eliminating that position if you should not prevail in this case? From eliminating all judicial secretaries?
Well, I believe that the county still has an obligation, a statutory obligation under 5915, now 5922, to provide staffing for county operation. And the county operation, unless this position is going to be separated off and made a state employee or something else, still involves providing personnel to serve the courts.
Well, of course, if I could just follow up, at least my understanding is that there are many courts in the state that don't have judicial secretaries. In Milwaukee, I don't think they don't even have. I mean, what would prevent, if you were to not prevail here, would there be anything to prevent you other than, well, I don't know, goodwill, from simply saying for every three circuit court judges, there shall be one secretary?
No, on the other hand, I think the county board, through time and the facts that are in there, talk about not only the staffing, but also facilities and the function of the courts, have supported the courts because it's a very important function. And I don't see that necessarily changing because of an adverse decision in this case.
Can I just ask you, would this affect any other types of employees in the court? I don't know what the setup is in Eau Claire, whether deputy sheriffs serve as bailiffs and whether they're subject to collective bargaining agreement or other employees that may be servicing the court.
Well, as far as employees servicing the court and whatever that means, whatever that means, because that can be the night janitor that cleans up the...
That's already decided.
That janitor was a lot more than a janitor.
Sure was.
The bailiffs are in a different collective bargaining agreement. There are also civil bailiffs that are controlled by the courts. There is a chief circuit court employee, which at the present time is an employee of the courts. All of the clerk of courts employees are represented by AFSCME. And they serve the courts, and then definitionally, who else serves the courts? There's the juvenile intake office, the child support agency, all those people are represented.
The argument is advanced that compatibility and competence are important qualifications, and the janitor case can be cited for that proposition. Strong support for that proposition. How do you distinguish the In re janitor of Supreme Court case?
I think you have to read In re janitor. It makes a very seemingly straightforward statement, but most of the case is a detailed explanation of how this is a peculiar position, about how it would take 3 to 6 months to fill it, and about all of the qualifications that were necessary to fill the position. In this case, we have, and the facts are in the record, we have a qualified person that can step right into the case. I think what In re janitor does is it really, in its own way, before there was the test for when you use the inherent authority, as a defensive mechanism where there's a compelling need, the court in that case really established that in that case, with that position and what that responsibility was, there was a material impairment of the functioning and efficiency of the courts. In this case, there's absolutely no showing, there's no facts to indicate that at all there would be. And I think to use the inherent authority, there has to be factual basis to use it. In this case, there simply is not.
Well, can you, In re janitor, of course, stands for the proposition that the power to appoint these assistants essential to the proper regard from a performance of judicial business is reserved exclusively for the judicial branch. And I'm just saying now, and you're indicating that the bumping process is new up there. For instance, could all of the present secretaries serving or judicial assistants / serving the judges, they all potentially could be bumped at any time, right?
Well, to initiate the bumping, you have to have a layoff. So there has to be a reduction in staff someplace.
But
Potentially, but it depends on their seniority, and it also depends on whether there is somebody available within the collective bargaining group that has the qualifications to fill the job. I think in this case, there's a uniquely qualified person for this job.
Yes, but potentially, if anyone is out there, anyone that works for the judge potentially could be gone at some time because they could be bumped out of that position. Is that the way the system is set up now?
Would you answer that question, and then we'll go on to Ms. Dalke, and you'll probably have to answer similar questions. Thank you.
There is an outside chance, based on the people that currently fill the positions and the seniority they have. That's very unlikely, though. And that does assume that there is, if a layoff situation occurs, there is a qualified person available to fill the position. And that I could not tell you. There are two qualified people in my office because the other two legal secretary positions are in my office.
Thank
but
you,
they would
counsel.
Be subject to the same.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Geraldine.
If it pleases the court, I am Bruce Alcini, and I am here representing the FSCME 2223 proceeding. This is one of those cases where you can reason from a result that was reached in a particular case in the past, and reason from that result backwards to the premise, or you can reason from the premise that was advanced in that earlier case, which ultimately led on the facts of that case to the result. I would submit to you that the first way of doing it is the wrong way of doing it, that the way we normally would reason this kind of a case is from the premise, applying that to the facts, and reaching results. Now,
what's the premise?
The premise is that the inherent power of the circuit court, in its simplest terms, the inherent power is a constitutional variation of the common sense proposition that any agency of government to which a task has been given to perform has the power necessary to carry out that task. With respect to administrative agencies, with respect to municipal corporations, we speak in terms of that power which is necessarily implied. And what we're talking about here is essentially the same concept, that which is necessarily implied, which is necessary to accomplish the task. But it has to be necessary. It's not just the power that floats out there that can be invoked at will whenever somebody feels like it. There's got to be a need that has to be met in order for the power to apply. Let me
raise this. This is what bothers me here. A judicial assistant is a close assistant of the judge, I'm assuming. Therefore, it has confidential information, confidential drafts. If the person is really good and the judge knows how to use that person well in the job, it can be a very helpful and important adjunct to the office. For purposes of decision-making, not that the assistant's going to do decision-making, but in terms of getting things out. And yet, the way the system operates, the judge has very limited input. Now, I gather there's input in initial hiring. Don't have to necessarily look at all the people, but the final three or whatever it is.
Right.
But then, after you hire somebody, the person can get bumped. Maybe a perfectly qualified person, but may not have the qualifications that judge is looking for. And it may not be a person with whom that judge can work easily. All of which affects the work product. And then I find very distressing in terms of putting that person under the collective bargaining agreement. On the other hand, I also find it distressing if a public official using public money doesn't follow good personnel hiring practices, giving everybody an equal opportunity for a job, and then maintains a good relation with that employee, giving it the protections of a collective bargaining agreement in terms of firing only for cause. So I'm looking at both ends of that. So that leads me to find a basic conflict here between two principles, two premises, you would say. And how do I get out of that?
Well, the question is, what is in conflict, though? I mean, let me submit that. Let me just see if I can get it. The likelihood of the bumping should be come into play as it relates to a judicial secretary, as it's been explained by Mr. Zames, is probably less likely to occur over a period of years than that the secretary will become pregnant and have to be replaced for a period of time, which did in fact happen only a few years earlier, was replaced by a limited term employee. The possibility of the bumping provisions applying in this case is probably even less likely than to occur than that the secretary is going to leave for whatever her own personal reasons might be. I mean, what we are talking about, I believe, Justice Abramson, is inconvenience. And what the Holmes case tells us is that is not a reason for rejecting legislative initiatives, and that's what we're talking about here.
Well, let me just, and I'm going to piggyback on the Chief's question, and then you can continue answering it. One of the things I think that for people who sat on a trial bench is very clear is that the staff reflects the court in a lot of ways, the secretary, the clerk, the person who greets. It's very personality-driven. If you have somebody who's good with the public, who is understanding, who doesn't tell inappropriate jokes, who all sorts of intangible things that don't show up necessarily on testing, and maybe just fine if you're working in a back office where you aren't dealing with the public. There are no protections for the judge in the collective bargaining, bumping, or even just the placement of a particular person, in that suddenly somebody is now representing that court in all its official dealings with the public and with others that the judge has no control over. I mean, that's more than inconvenience.
Well, I don't mean to disparage that. With all due respect, though, most of us in responsible professional positions can say the same thing. I mean, there is a sense in which it's very frustrating to hear the judges argue that my secretary is unique. I mean, when you've been in a law firm for a quarter of a century, I can tell you every secretary is unique, and every lawyer makes that argument.
You choose the secretary and you fire your secretary.
Not necessarily.
Okay. Your secretaries are under a bargaining agreement?
No, but it's not necessarily the individual lawyer's choice.
That's well, if you're the boss, isn't it, Mr. Elgin?
If you're the boss.
Yeah. Well, if you're a partner, you get to choose your own secretary.
Maybe. Let me make a point here by analogy. Well, I mean, we get bogged down in these arguments about the concern that the judiciary is being infringed upon by the legislature. But let's change the parties. Let's assume just for a minute and a half here that this lawsuit, I'm standing here representing the Department of Workforce Development's secretary, the secretary of the greatest department in the executive department of the state government, largest number of employees, and I'm in a lawsuit where we have sued the Department of Employment Relations and the AFSCME district council that represents the employees. And the contention we're making is this. Look, I represent the executive. I am the executive. When I am administering the laws of the state of Wisconsin, I am exercising the constitutional function. And I can tell you that I want my employees, the employees who I can trust. I'm going to exercise my inherent power. I mean, I have a constitutional authority here, too. I'm the executive. I want to exercise my inherent power with respect to those employees. And I will simply not accept the Fair Employment Act, Municipal Employment Relations Act, State Employment Relations Act, overtime wages laws. Those interfere with my ability to employ my staff to carry out my constitutional function as executive. Or you can carry that same argument to municipal.
Can I just ask you a question? Does the executive of your department covered by collective bargaining agreement and then has to take whoever is appointed?
I can't answer that question. I don't know. My understanding.
The analogy.
My understanding is that the civil service system applies to these hires. And the collective bargaining agreement is simply a variant of a civil service system.
But many agency heads have the authority to hire people outside the civil service system. Maybe only one or two people, people that can be hired or fired at will. The governor has the capacity to do that. The legislature has the capacity to do that. Why not the judiciary?
Are we
just another agency, as you implied in your opening remarks? You used the word agency twice.
My point is this, that to the extent that, and I'm not sure that it's true, but you are more familiar with some of these things in state government than I am, Justice Fowler, but it may be that that Mr. Clauser, secretary, for example, is not subject to civil service, but that would be by specific legislative exception to the civil service system, I would expect.
I think you're right.
Now, the point here is we have three branches of government, each one of which has responsibilities that have been delegated to it. The legislature, in our Republican form of government, by nature is going to exercise, I would submit, the most influence in terms of the enacted laws and public policies that it's responsible for.
If you would sum up, Stanley.
We do not have a conflict here between the impairment of the judicial function, the ability of the courts to function as courts, and the exercise of the legislative activity that's in question here.
Thank you, Mr. Elke. Mr. Rice, you represent the judges here.
May it please the court, my name is David Rice. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the plaintiffs in this action. Present today is Judge Paul Lynn, seated in the second row. The other circuit judges, including Judge Barlin, who's doing a jury trial, couldn't be here for obvious reasons. But they, along with the other 154 active and reserve circuit judges, are represented in the amicus brief, which was filed in support of the plaintiff's position in this case.
I assume not all the judges have the same kind of collective bargaining agreements, and not all the judges have the same kind of judicial assistants.
Well, that's true, Your Honor, and I was going to point out that you are among the fortunate ones, because the judges of the Supreme Court and the judges of the Court of Appeals, their assistants and employees are specifically treated as unclassified employees. So, by statute, that's section 230.08 sub 2 H and I. And under the State Labor Relations Act 111E, sub 7 A, the term employee includes only those who are classified. So at least as to the appellate branches of government, this issue won't arise.
Counsel, I want to follow up on the discussion that was ensuing just before you started. And let me give you the fact situation of not some secretary of an agency that is in state government, but rather the district attorney of Eau Claire County, who presumably has a legal secretary. Presumably, the legal secretary is a person that he places great confidence in and a person that he is compatible with. And it would be a great inconvenience to his office, hypothetically speaking, to lose this secretary of X number of years who he is very interested in keeping him. How is that any different from the judges?
Your Honor, that is significantly different. And in order to answer that question, I want to address the court and concede that in my brief, I didn't adequately address the issue of the separation of powers doctrine. And that's what I'm going to do this morning, and I'm going to do it in answer to your question. And the reason that there is a significant difference is that in our form of government, we have three branches, the judicial, the legislative, and the executive branch, each having certain defined powers under the Constitution. Now, some of those powers are exclusive to a particular branch. Some of those powers are shared. What this court has said in its separation of powers cases, as late as 1996, and Joni B., written by Judge Geske, and some earlier decisions written by Judge Babbage, is that certain functions are exclusive to the judiciary, and that those exclusive functions cannot be intruded upon in any way by other branches of government. And in the case of State Ex Rel Fiedler versus the Wisconsin Senate, Justice Babich cited In Re Janitor as an example of one of those areas of exclusive authority in the court. And it's because then, yeah, the court has that exclusive authority that it's a different situation than the district attorney.
Are you saying then, because of the existence, in large part, of the case, the precedent of In Re Janitor, that the court system can say we have exclusive inherent authority to control who our assistants are?
That's absolutely
and right. Only because of that case and the precedent that it establishes. Without that, our assistants would be on the par equal to the legal secretary and the district attorney part of the executive branch of government.
Yes and no. The answer is yes, if you continue to adhere to the line of cases, which is now well over 100 years, which was recognized in Fiedler, and was also recognized again in the case involving Judge Grady, another case where this court found exclusive authority in the judiciary. If you continue to adhere to that line of cases, then you find that that's an exclusive judicial power, and that's the end of the case.
Well, that case has to be premised on the Constitution.
It is premised on the Constitution.
Okay, so the answer is that it's irrelevant about whether there's that case,
right,
because you think it's constitutional.
Well, when I was listening to Mr. Zane's argument, I was thinking of the old adage that if you don't have the law, you argue the facts, and vice versa. Here, we have the law. And the law, I think, is clear that the power to hire and fire employees of the court is an exclusive judicial function.
Let me ask you about that. So the bailiffs, like the deputy sheriffs from Milwaukee County, obviously, the Milwaukee County bailiffs that are critical to the operation of criminal courts, each judge ought to have the right to hire and fire those bailiffs in his or her courtroom?
Well, presumably they would have that right. I mean, if you look at the Stevenson case, the sheriff provided two bailiffs to the court, and the court thought it needed one more, and went out and hired one, and then ordered the county to pay for it, and this court ultimately upheld that. That's an issue which fortunately doesn't arise very much, because even in the area of exclusive authority, the court, as in the Moran case, has decided to exercise that authority in comedy with the other branches of government. That's why this case only arose because there wasn't a vacancy in the position that Penny Lawson wanted to bump into. In 1981, when there was a vacancy and the person posted and was qualified, the person took the position. It wasn't a problem.
Now, let me ask you about that. Are you taking the position, however, that the judge, if there is a vacancy and the county has a qualified current employee, that the judge has the inherent authority to say, I'm not taking that employee, I can go outside, I want you to advertise outside and find someone else?
Yes, I think that's true. And but I think that ultimately is subject to review by this court as to whether that trial court has acted so unreasonably.
Two things on that. Can the judge say, I'm not going to the county personnel office, I'm not going to advertise, I've got someone I want, and I'm going to determine who it is, and I'll even determine what the pay is?
I think arguably, under the exclusive authority part of the separation of powers doctrine, the answer is yes. But as a practical matter, the judges aren't going to do that. They're not going to go out and set up an employment agency to interview candidates. What they're going to do is...
Well, why not?
Why don't they?
I mean, they might not.
Because the system works. Certainly, they would have the authority to hire from outside the civil service system if they wanted to.
And fire at will.
Yeah, fire at will. Now, to answer the question that you...
So is that what you're asking us to say in this case?
Yes, that they have the exclusive authority to hire and fire. And it's such a well-recognized proposition, in not only in Ray Janitor, but in the Winnebago County case, where in a footnote, the court recognized it. In Kewaunee County, the court recognized it.
So what you're really asking is that the judge's judicial assistants not be covered by the collective bargaining agreement, period?
No, that's not what I'm asking.
Okay, why not?
Because
they don't have to be covered on hiring. They don't have to be covered on firing. So what's left?
All the other terms and conditions of employment, including pay and...
Including what?
Pay, compensation. If you look at Crawford County versus WRC, which was a case that I cited in my brief, it wasn't a judicial power case. It was a power of a clerk. But what the court said in that case on page 78 was that as to all other terms of the contract, they would continue to apply.
Let me ask you, if a judge decides under your theory that he or she no longer wants a judicial assistant and so they're out, it's up to the union then and the county to somehow find another place for that employee?
I think that is a pragmatic, yes, the answer is yes, and I think that is a pragmatic problem, and the court in Winnebago County dealt with exactly that issue, and they said, yes, we recognize the judge has the power to say, I can't work with this person anymore who's eavesdropping and recording my conversations. But the person doesn't lose entitlement to employment without just cause protection under the bargaining agreement. It creates a terrible problem for the county. The ultimate resolution to this whole question is to make these assistants state employees. That's something we can all agree on, at least Keith and I can agree on.
You're not arguing that we can do that.
Right?
You're not arguing that we can do that in the context of...
No, it'd be nice if it could, but no, we don't have to
just check it. We're going the wrong wing, Mr.
We've gone halfway. We've got the court reporters are now state employees, but it's necessary to get the assistants covered.
And then it's determined by the court system how they hire and fight.
That's right.
Now, the other part of this that you were starting to talk about is the relationship between the trial judges and this court. Because under Article 7, Section 3.2, under Article 3, Subsection 1, Supreme Court shall have superintending and administrative authority over all courts.
That's right.
Which is what we do with the Court of Orders.
Right.
So why shouldn't the Supreme Court be the one that determines how the judges shall select their secretaries or judicial assistants and hire, fire, et cetera?
Well, I think in effect you are. If you affirm the decision of the trial court in this case, what you're doing is giving the trial judges that decision-making authority by delegation. And then in the event that it's not exercised properly and some review of that decision is sought, you as a superintending court can determine whether the circuit court has acted out of line.
So if you think that the judge hasn't hired properly and hasn't given everybody an opportunity, you think a grievance should come up here? Or if the judge has fired without cause, or for improper cause, you think a grievance should come up here?
Well, I think that's at least a possibility to have this court act within a superintending power to make sure that terribly aberrational decisions aren't made.
Because otherwise this is handled through the county personnel department, so something has to replace that.
Now, a particular judge might elect in a particular case, and again, this doesn't go to the power issue, but to, as a matter of comedy, to submit to the collective bargaining agreement with respect to discharges, might even submit to arbitration. If they chose. But that's as a matter of comedy, it's not as a matter of obligation.
You know, of course, the janitors here are, I assume, under the state plan. We don't hire the janitors.
Sure.
We don't have keys to our offices.
And as a matter of comedy, you've elected to go along with that process, partly because it works. Now, the case is probably close.
We'll debate that issue.
I think we should.
We handle personnel issues for judges.
I happen to agree with you, but I think...
Yeah, that does work. Let me just ask you one more question, though.
Deference to the state.
In terms of reviewability, it is your position that the bumping decision to accept the bump or not is not reviewable. So in this case, the decision of Judge Lenz and the other judges in conjunction with him not to accept a bumped employee in replacement of an assistant they already have is not a reviewable decision.
Well,
or are we reviewing it?
I guess in a certain sense you're reviewing it as to whether they have the power.
Yeah, but we're not reviewing,
but we're not
asked to review the discretionary or the...
No, I don't think that issue has been presented to you. And I'm not even... I mean, I don't have a case precedent interpreting the Constitution provision that Justice Abramson cited to you that says that is, in fact, what would happen. I'm just positing that to address Justice Abramson's concerns, that may be one way of preventing an arbitrary exercise of authority by the judges. In most cases, in most counties, judges are going to comply with the bargaining agreement and they're going to follow it. In fact, the judges in this county have followed it forever. And when there hasn't been somebody suitable under the bargaining agreement, then they've cooperated with the county under the civil service system and interviewed the candidates provided by the county civil service system. It's only in this one instance where they had somebody who was an incumbent. That's what created this issue. If the incumbent had left, we probably wouldn't be here. They probably would have followed the same pattern that they followed in 1981. Now, the case that's probably closest on point to this case, but it's not an inherent power case, is the Iowa County case, Judge Bavlinger authored. And that case involved a situation where the judges, circuit judges, clearly had statutory authority to appoint and to remove. And the question was whether or not the collective bargaining agreement could modify it. It was exactly the same situation we have here, where the most senior person was urged by the union as the person the judge had to pick. And the judge said no. And this court said, in its opinion, that the collective bargaining agreement could not be harmonized with that appointed authority and with that removal authority. And that's exactly what we're urging here, that if we take the separation of powers doctrine, and preparing for my argument yesterday, I typed out about 7 pages of quotes from these cases, which I'd be happy to make available to the court rather than have you write down all the cites in my presentation. But if we get past the exclusive judicial authority, and let's say that we have to deal with the question of shared power, then the question is whether or not there's an unreasonable burden placed on the court or substantial interference in the court. That's the test. That's the test Mr. Elke was alluding to. And our argument there is that there is an unreasonable burden placed on the court and a substantial interference because it's an interference with the exercise of the power in the first instance. We're really talking past one another.
So let me ask you about that. It's returning to the Danaher issue a little bit. Is it your position that anyone who works in and around the system, the court system, that the judicial officer, the judge, or the court here has the inherent power to hire and fire those people? Now, In re Janitor, obviously the court at that time went through a long reasoning process of why that janitor was particularly important to the court, and obviously the rule has changed substantially. But does that go to all employees instead of service to court, or where is the line drawn then? If it just is the power of the court?
Now, I don't think that you can draw a line. The only, it would be an interesting constitutional issue if you had a debate with a sheriff.
Well, what about the janitor? What about the janitors in the circuit courts? Same answer that the...
Yes, ultimately the courts would have that authority. I mean, if you look back at some of the old cases, they had the authority to require interpreters and various other attendants on the court.
So it makes no difference how critical they are to the constitutional functions of the court. It's just that they work for the court in running the court.
Well, I think that's ultimate. I mean, the problem, I understand that you have a line-drawing problem here. And I don't know how you sensibly draw that line. If you wanted to fashion an argument, as a matter of fact, that these people who are so close to the court and are integral to the actual decision-making process are somehow...
Court commissioners?
From others.
What about court commissioners? If they are subject in part to collective bargaining agreements?
I'm not familiar enough to speak to that question.
They're played by judicial officers subject to the control of the court. I mean, you can't get closer to decision-making than the court commission.
But to finish up on the point that I was trying to make, I don't think that we should, the focus here ought to be on whether or not this particular person was compatible or not. But what the substantial interference is with the power to make the decision. And that's really what this court was talking about in Iowa County. If you say that it's subject to the bargaining agreement, then who determines the qualifications here? Everybody agrees here the person was qualified. What if the union and the county set qualifications for the positions that were at odds with what the judges wanted? If they prevail, then the bargaining agreement controls, and they have to pick the judges have to pick the most senior person, irrespective of qualifications. If they decide they don't like somebody, either in the selection process or in the removal process, it makes the bargaining agreement control, and it makes the arbitrator under the bargaining agreement the ultimate arbiter of who fills the positions. That's exactly what Justice Babbage wrote in Iowa County.
That, of course, was statutory.
Right.
And so you've got to leap from the statute to say that the Wisconsin Constitution says all employees that relate to the judicial activity are to be appointed, and use whatever the language is in the Iowa case. But that's what you're saying. Read that statute into the Constitution.
Right. But the point that I'm trying to make here is not that point. I'm not saying that somehow you should take a leap of faith or a leap from Iowa County to reach the result. I'm citing Iowa County for a different proposition. That is, if you don't say that there's an exclusive authority in the judiciary under the shared powers doctrine to come out in favor of the judges in this case, which I think is the way you'll come out. But if you don't come out that way and you get to the question of an overlapping control and you look at whether there can be a...
Are you telling us the judge can't operate with the secretary?
No. And I'm not telling you the judge couldn't operate with a replacement secretary.
Right.
That's not my point.
So what's the impairment to the judge?
The impairment is not in the practical operation of who does, who can do the job and who can't. The impairment is to the judge's power to decide.
How? I don't understand that. I didn't have my judicial assistant affect my judicial decision-making.
If the judge has a power under the Constitution to decide, and...
You need to decide who to hire.
Decide who to hire.
Oh, okay.
If the judge has that power...
Is it exclusive or shared?
If you say it's exclusive, then the case is over.
Right.
You say, I'm trying to address the situation where you get beyond that. You say it's shared.
Okay.
Then
you have to show impairment. Substantial impairment.
There has to be a substantial interference or unreasonable burden on the decision on the function. And I'm saying that the function is substantially interfered with when the judges can't exercise the decision-making function.
That's
the other side is saying that there's no impairment because the person's qualified. So that's where we come out.
Well, if you take that argument, you're back to, it's circular, you're back to that it has to be exclusive by definition. Because you're going to say that anything that affects it reduces that power, so you don't have to show anything else. So you wind up saying it's exclusive.
No, I think under Iowa County, and that was the point of Iowa County, was that the judges still have the statutory right to hire and fire. But can that be harmonized with the provisions of a collective bargaining agreement which mandate the most senior person? And what this court said was, no, you can't harmonize. It interferes with the decision making. You could have come out the other way. You could have come out the other way in this case. You could say the bargaining agreement controls. The judges have to pick the person who's most senior in the bumping situation as the end of it. But what I'm saying is, if it's a shared powers case and not exclusive, that our argument on substantial interference is that it interferes with that right. Now, another thing that separates this case from the other separation of powers cases is that we're not here asking you to invalidate any piece of legislation. The dispute here is not between the Municipal Employment Relations Act on the one hand and the judge's authority on the other hand. The dispute here, as Justice Bivette said in Iowa County, is between the collective bargaining agreement and the judge's power. And that's significant because most of the times when you have when you've had a difficult time, it's been in shared powers cases. It's been saying to primarily the legislative branch that what they've done is unconstitutional. In this case, under the Municipal Act, the union and the employer could have decided that these positions weren't covered at all. They could have decided that they were covered, but that the judges had exclusive authority to appoint and to remove, which is exactly what had to happen in Iowa County after your decision in that case. So this is not a case where a law dictates a result which would contradict with the judge's authority. This is a case where the particular provisions of a particular bargaining agreement conflict with the judge's authority.
I gather it's your ultimate position that we should declare that the collective bargaining agreement doesn't cover judges' judicial assistance unless the judge, each individual judge, makes a decision that it will.
No, we're not asking you to declare.
Okay.
What we're asking you to declare is simply that provision of the collective bargaining agreement in this instance, invalidate that provision which mandated that the judge accept the replacement employee under the bumping process. All other terms of the collective bargaining agreement continue to apply to both employees, except to the extent there was an inconsistency. Now, Mr. Zane is going to say, well, there's an inconsistency then in the seniority provision. Well, there's an inconsistency in the judge's power controls. Only insofar as there is an inconsistency do we ask you to invalidate the bargaining agreement.
Your brief says the court, circuit court's inherent power to appoint and remove the judge's union secretary can't be modified. To appoint and to remove.
Right.
So why must the judge follow the collective bargaining agreement in appointing the secretary?
Well, if I said that, I didn't mean to. I'm sorry.
What
I said was that the bargaining agreement continues to apply except to the extent that it contradicts the judge's authority to appoint and to remove. And also, if there's a problem with seniority because of the bumping provision, then the seniority provision also has to be modified by the judge's authority. But the only other thing that I want to say, and I won't use all of my time, I would like to, with the court's permission, provide copies of those cases that I received yesterday.
Counsel, you're advocating that only the provision regarding appointment of assistants should be affected. All other parts of the collective bargaining unit are in full force and effect. What happens if a judge says, okay, this is my assistant, but, you know, you really don't have to work from 8 to 5, and you can take off a month here and a month there. Those provisions are all in the collective bargaining unit. I'm controlling what I can tell you what is essential to the running of this office, and this assistant just doesn't have to be here in the summer. This assistant wants to be here or there. What prevents that?
Well, in part, the judge is the determiner of necessity. So if the judge says, I need you to stay late tonight to work, in order to fulfill the function of the court, the judge makes that decision.
Well, can the judge say, I don't need you for the months of July, August, and September? It's not really necessary. Can the judge do that under your argument?
I think the judge determines the necessity of the person working in the court. No.
Okay, then that part of the collective bargaining unit, in terms of hours, it doesn't apply also. Is that correct?
Well, what I was going to say based on the Winnebago case was there may be an obligation on the part of the county, and that's why this is difficult, to continue to employ that person in a position because of the employment contract, because of the terms of the bargaining agreement, and they may have to be assigned to do other work for the county.
Let me give you a little more difficult one. That is not June, July, and August, or 3 months in a row, but the judge says, I know every other employee has to stay until 4:30, but you, you know, 2 o'clock is fine with me. Or rather than 4:30, 3:45. The judge can do that, no problem.
The answer is the judge ultimately sets the terms of employment, whether the person would have a right to additional benefits under the agreement as in Winnebago County, independent of the judge's decision-making, would be determined by the agreement. It is a problem area, there's no question about it. But, you know, one of the things that strikes me is when you ask all these questions, is that you're really creating a kind of parade of horribles, what-ifs. And the fact is that the system works fine.
So let me give you an example that I know is a real one. Assuming the judge goes on vacation for a week and the judge says, I really would like my judicial assistant to stay at the desk and answer the phones and handle things, and the county says, under our collective bargaining, we can use this employee somewhere else. We have a shortage in here. We have this crisis. We want to move this person for a week. Since the court is down anyway, half every day she's going to spend over here. And the judge says, no, I want them there answering the phone. The judge's power prevails on that.
I don't have any question. The judge decides. And this is not
these are things that happen on a daily basis in courthouses all over. And your argument is the judges can insist that the
judges have the authority to decide. And what you said earlier about the determining compatibility with an employee, I mean, there's people who are qualified on paper, but you just can't work with the person. I mean, that is a detriment to getting the work of the court on. Let me just make one quick point.
Let me make a quick point.
The one point that I want to make is...
I lost. Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. We've done this before. When you look at the amicus brief filed by the Counties Association, I have a great deal of respect for the Counties Association. I think they do a good job in helping the courts reach decisions. But when you look at page 5 of their brief, note that they cite Winnebago County, and they cite it entirely out of context. I had to go back and read Winnebago. Mr. Zanes, I think, agrees with me. You have to go back and read Winnebago County. They're citing it almost for the proposition that the judge's power is subject to the bargaining agreement, clearly, and that's what the court said. In fact, the court, in the preceding sentence in the footnotes, say just the opposite. So be careful when you read the amicus brief. Justice Abramson?
My turn. No, you keep saying the system works. Well, it might work in Eau Claire County. It may not work in other counties that similarly have collective bargaining agreements. And as I've traveled around the state, I've heard many complaints that the person hired through the county personnel department is, quote, not qualified, at least from that judge's standpoint. And that judge is, quote, stuck with somebody. And it seems to me if we do what you want court to do, then it's open season. And any judge around the state who feels that that person is not qualified can say, you know, I like you, you may be great, the county may like you, but for me, it's not okay. And you may be a county employee, they're going to find a place for you, but I'm going to go out and hire somebody, I'm going to put an ad in the paper, I'll take the responsibility of interviewing, I'm going to hire somebody that's qualified for me, go out and do it, and then now, does that person get into the collective bargaining agreement? So that that person now becomes a county employee that is under the bargaining agreement, and the county is responsible for him or her? Can the judge do it? That's the first thing.
Yes, I think
under your argument, yes. Okay.
Although what the judge ought to do, if the person has shortcomings, is to...
But the judge can do what I just said.
Has the power.
What she can do, has the power to do it. Now, is that person going to be an employee of the county for purposes of a collective bargaining agreement?
I think so, because I don't think the judge can independently hire somebody. I think under the statutes, the person, he may have the authority to hire, but the person would have to be employed in the guise of a county employee.
All right. And then 5 months pass, and the judge made a mistake. You all do that. He hires the wrong person. The judge says, so long, I like you too, but you and I don't mesh. Now the judge goes out and does the same thing again. This time, fortunately, the judge hire someone he or she does like. So now we've got three county employees, right? Two of which are under the collective bargaining agreement. The third one is protected by the collective bargaining agreement or fired, but is on the county payroll. That's possible under all this.
No, it's possible.
The other side says your turn, but your red light is on, Mr. Wright. Mr. Alkey.
I'm going to jump around and make a couple of points. First, Mr. Zames advises me that he does not choose his secretary. She is assigned to him on the basis of the collective bargaining agreement for the civil service system in the county. Chief Justice Abramson correctly identified it, but what's being made here is a classic circular argument. The argument is the inherent power applies when the ability of the court to function is substantially impaired. The ability of the court to function is substantially impaired because it interferes with the inherent power. I mean, it's a classic circular argument. And I think the discussion has pointed out the alternatives that are being argued for here by the judges will lead to absolute chaos within our county government system. Now, I have to ask, what it really comes down to is this. The argument, I think, is simple and straightforward. The inherent power applies when there is a compelling need, as this court has said, for the exercise of that power. And so what you really are being asked to answer here today, what you are being asked to hold is that and understanding and sympathizing with the relationship that may develop between a judge and his secretary, and we all had that experience, does that relationship amount to, if it's interrupted by pregnancy, termination of employment for whatever reason, resignation, or by bumping rights, as in this case, does that amount to a constitutional impairment of the judicial power of the circuit court? That's the question. Does that relationship, the feelings that they may have for each other, the reliance the judge may have in the abstract, because there's nothing to say that Ms. Walsky would not fill the shoes of the current incumbent and then some. We don't know. She hasn't been given the chance. But
well, Mr. Elkey, do you recognize to any degree that a judicial assistant slash secretary is anything more than a mechanic to a judge?
Sure.
How much?
A lot. The people who work in county government are important people. They do important things. Whether they are serving as the...
But you recognize that it requires more than simply typing skills, filing skills,
yes,
bookkeeping skills, etc.
I do. But...
More than other county jobs, county secretaries?
Well, I don't know. You'd have to ask Mr. Zames what he thinks of his secretary. How important is his position?
You admit that there is a that a judicial secretary, for instance, shares confidential information with the judge, may open up the judge's mail, may confer with people that are appearing in court?
I don't understand where the conflict is. I mean, I don't understand what your question is. Are you saying...
I'm asking you if you recognize a special relationship, a special duty in a judicial assistant that exists,
yes,
over and above what a normal secretary to a county executive might have.
Yes, but what I'm suggesting, Justice Babbage, is that that same need for the maintaining of confidences may... Trust me, may exist outside of the judicial setting. But yet, people's employments...